Just a quick note, this podcast contains some explicit language. Hey everybody, I'm Ann Powers, critic and correspondent for NPR Music.
And I'm Hazel Sills, an editor at NPR Music.
It's New Music Friday, April 19th, and we're here to talk about the best albums out this week, including the rapper Baby Mother, the experimental electronic artist Claire Rousset, and one of my favorite bands ever, Pearl Jam. But first, Hazel, we have some very important business to get to.
So important.
Because it is a national holiday. It is the release. International holiday. What am I saying?
I have my hand on my heart. I'm ready to pledge allegiance.
It is the release date for Taylor Swift's new album. It's called The Tortured Poets Department, and you and I have both been eagerly listening to this since we received a stream not too long ago.
You smoked them 8-7 bars of chocolate. We declare Charlie Puth should be a bigger artist. I scratch your head, you fall asleep like a tattooed golden retriever. But you awaken with dread, pounding nails in your head. But I've read this one where you come undone. I chose this cyclone with you.
What's the verdict? What do you think?
I was really pleasantly surprised by this album. I really did not know what to expect, but I feel like this is an album of Taylor in one of her best modes. I feel like it's a mode that a lot of people resent her for. I feel like it's a mode that she's tried to shake off. But this is Taylor Swift returning to sharp personal songwriting about breakups and bad lovers. And I'm really all about it. What did you feel?
I agree with you. I think it is a great zone for Taylor, and she actually takes it forward. She goes to a new place with this familiar style of songwriting. But first, let's talk about the music, right? Mm-hmm. Because there's a lot to talk about with the lyrics. There's a lot to talk about with the storytelling. But I just want to say, I think she is in a great place musically. She chose to work with her besties, her steadfast men-at-arms, Jack Antonoff and Aaron Dessner, very smart. The album is beautifully sequenced, kind of alternating between the two. Very few guests on this album, which I think was wise. It feels completely sort of like comforting. We're in that Taylor closed universe in a sense, you know? It's not her trying to be country, be folk, be rap, be anything but herself. And by this time, she is her own genre. So musically, it works. But I think we really need to dive into the story she's telling here, because this is not just an album. In a sense, it is an audiobook, you know? The arc of the album is very novelistic. And I've been writing about it. And not the first time I've compared Taylor Swift to autofiction writers of today. You know, I mean, it really is her getting so personal, so intensely personal in these songs, but somehow bursting through to a universal space. How do you think she does that?
Taylor is so good at that kind of extremely specific cutting songwriting, you know, like Dear John Taylor, All Too Well Taylor, and then taking those personal experiences and making them so universal in ways in which her listeners can fit inside them. And this feels like it's not just an album about heartbreak. It feels like there are so many themes of like really complicated, like unreciprocated love, or sort of being in doubt about your relationship. And a lot of songs where I hear a side to Taylor that I don't think I've really heard before, a sort of weakness, like a song like Down Bad.
Did you really beat me up? Cloud of sparkling dust, just to do experiments on. Tell me I was the chosen one. Show me that this world is bigger than us. Then sent me back where I came from. For a moment I knew cosmic love. Now I'm down bad crying at the gym. Everything comes out, teenage petulance. Fuck it if I can't have him. I might
Musically, it's got an R&B flavor, and there is almost like a blues or R&B sensibility to that song. You know what
yeah.
I mean?
Yeah. So many moments on this album where she's just sort of like, I thought this was love.
Right.
You told me this was love.
Right.
But was it even real? Like when she sings yeah. on So Long, London, like you said that you loved me, but where were the clues?
And right.
there's a thread of insecurity here that feels very potent and at least to me, like new for Taylor's breakup song canon.
You swore that you loved me, but where were the clues? I died on the altar waiting for the proof. You sacrificed us to the gods of your bluest days. And I'm just getting color back into my face. I'm just mad as hell cause I loved this place for so long, London.
This is definitely her blue, her blood on the tracks, mm-hmm. her miseducation of Lauryn Hill. This is a record that's going to stand on that shelf with those other records as documenting a particularly tumultuous time in her life. We're not naming names. We don't feel the need, I think, to name the names, but mm-mm. all y'all probably, if you're at all a Swiftie, have even the tiniest Swiftie bone in your body, you know the names and they're very recognizable. But there's a kind of a, I don't know, I keep thinking it's like this containment or almost claustrophobia mm-hmm. to the narrative that makes it fit in with those other records in a way. Like, Taylor is usually such a people pleaser.
Yes.
I think she even has a lyric about this on the record too, but this is not people pleaser music. It is musically very pleasant, but I mean, the words, she's not out to please. She's out to figure shit out, like you're saying, and to be defiant. Like, be defiant toward the men who are silent or who have refused to acknowledge her truths. And then also, in a weird way, like, toward her own audience, I think.
Mm.
That is a thread here, I think. You know, a couple songs, few songs about how fame messes up her chances for love
mm-hmm.
and how fame is so distorting. I mean, she compares it to being trained like an animal for the circus or being kept in an asylum. It's, you know, there is a rebellion happening here against the monument that is Taylor.
Yeah, I think a perfect encapsulation of that, that sort of like her being a people pleaser, but then really sort of like carving her own path and sort of putting that aside a bit is the song on this album that I feel like we both agreed is going to be the song of the summer, which is I Can Do It With a Broken Heart.
Totally.
I'm so depressed, I act like it's my birthday every day. I'm so obsessed with him, but he avoids me like a plague. I cry a lot, but I am so productive. It's an art.
It's kind of twisted. It's like this incredible, like, Jack Antonoff synth pop number.
Huge, huge song.
Huge song. And I will say, the sound on this album is very much giving 1989. So if you were a 1989 person, who wasn't? I mean, let's admit it.
I have to say, it's not Max Martin. It's
yes.
It's still Jack. It's not absolute global pop amazement, but
totally.
But I hear why you're saying that.
But that is a song about being a performer. It's a song about putting on a smile. It's a song about being happy every day like it's your birthday, but yep. She literally sings about being depressed inside. And
exactly, completely.
She's sort of giving the audience that big, beautiful pop number that's undoubtedly going to be playing on Top 40 radio for the next few months, but there is this sourness to it. There is yeah. this like really sort of sadness at its core. And I think that's really interesting, like coming off the success of a song like Antihero as well from Midnights. That again was also a huge pop banger, but was a song about being really insecure and like trying to be self-aware and self-hating. And so, yeah, it's definitely a song on this album where I'm like, okay, you are really working through your celebrity and your fame mm-hmm. and what it affords you, but also what it takes away from you.
I've written a review of this record, and one thing I talk about in the review is how, in a strange way, these are small stories. They're not small because they belong to Taylor Swift, you know, or they're emanating from this goddess, as she refers to herself on one song.
Mm-hmm.
But they are small in that almost every song focuses on, not that one you just mentioned, but almost every song focuses on a scene with two people in mm-hmm. a kind of a closed space or a secret space, maybe, you know, inside an apartment, in a park where they're sitting on children's swings, or at a restaurant where no one is looking at them, which is in itself an impossible scenario unless they're shutting down the restaurant for Taylor. But but it's all very kind of like these set pieces that are just two people. But she still manages to, this is like her alchemy. Like, how does she make us care and feel that we can relate to her incredibly particular experience? I'm not sure I can figure it out, but it really works on this record. The more specific she gets, the more closed things get, the more it is just two people misunderstanding each other.
Yeah, she just has a way lyrically of giving you those little, you know, as you said, like hyper specific moments and details, you know, mentioning an album someone gave to her, or, you know,
right, the Blue Nile, for example, Downtown Lights, a song that was texted to her by a certain roguish lover that she had for a little while. No name.
Yeah. Or just like, you know, referencing a conversation that she had with someone about rings yeah. and cradles. And,
I know. Totally. Yeah. Oh, no. But that one image I love where she says, it's in one of the early songs, and she says, you know, you took my ring off my third finger and you put it on my fourth, and my heart exploded.
Yes.
And that is in some ways like super corny. I'm sorry. Like, she's still Taylor, and she still has her fixation on rings and cradles and fluffy angels and clouds and sunshine and all the things. But I can see that so well.
Yeah.
And it's like I could be in her body when that happens.
Yeah.
You know, and feel it.
Yeah. I think that image hit really hard for me because, you know, I think of Taylor Swift as someone whose earliest work was really grounded in super, almost conservative, deeply heteronormative ideals. I yes. mean, Love Story.
Right.
15.
Right. You be the prince and I be the princess.
Yeah. And, you know, over time, she's sort of come into her own, like, girl boss feminist consciousness. I don't think images of marriage and motherhood have populated her music as much as it has on this album, which was a huge surprise to me. I mean, there's that song Daddy, I Love Him, which is, you know, kind of cheeky.
It's a rewrite
yeah.
of Love
yes.
Story, though. It's a total rewrite.
Total rewrite. It's like, it's the love story for women in their mid-30s where she's, you know, kind of telling the same story, but with a little bit of a wink and a smile, like, I'm going to have
right,
his baby.
Exactly.
Just kidding.
yeah, just kidding.
Yeah.
Not actually. Yeah. Yeah.
So I would say that line about, like, moving the rings on her finger, I was like, you know, I thought Taylor was done with this.
I did too.
Is kind of what I thought. I was like, I thought Taylor wasn't thinking this way. And you know, whoever these songs are about, like, she, for the last few years, has maybe been in a place with someone, again, I don't know, where she was thinking about those things.
Yeah.
And that is a huge takeaway. I mean, that what I don't want to say take away
no.
from this album because I'm not Us Weekly.
Well,
but
no, it's an interesting. it's well, here we are trying to avoid, like, sinking into the gossip. But I think
yeah.
it's very difficult not to sink into the gossip with Taylor Swift because, well, she feeds it. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, she performs her relationships in public spaces for us to see, and B, the flow of this album, it is like a late night confession dump with your bestie. Like, that's
mm-hmm.
how you,
yes.
I mean, when I sat there and listened to it for the first time, I felt this wave coming at me. And it really felt like when someone is suddenly you're on your third glass of wine and they are just like, yeah, you thought things were good between me and him. I got some things to tell you right now. And wow, you're just taking it in. It's the rush of that I think, the momentum on the album. It's a long freaking album.
Yeah.
But it has a lot of momentum.
Every song on this album, I feel like, widens or sort of complicates the scope of the messages about her relationships and heartbreak, and in a way that's good.
Also, it's very sexual. It's very sexy.
It is.
Her bedsheets are on fire. I love the Frank Taylor, the Taylor who's trying to help us understand her understanding of desire, mm-hmm. even though, you know, the imagery can be like bedsheets on fire. Okay. That's some drama. That's some dramatic imagery. But nonetheless, I think the sound in her voice, like her singing, it's there's a lot of erotic pull.
Yeah.
In this album.
Yeah.
Can I say that about Taylor Swift?
I think she would want you to say that.
Well, also we should note real quick that it is about these romances. It's definitely confessional. But there is also this confrontation with fame, as we were talking about. And mm-hmm. there are a couple of songs. You mentioned one of them, the huge anthem, but also Clara Bow. I want to mm-hmm. talk about that song yes. before we finish, because that is my little obsession now.
This song is fake.
Beautifully constructed song she wrote with Aaron Dessner about confronting the fact that she is in her mid-30s and she's not so certain how long she's going to remain mm-hmm. the defining beauty, the defining star of our age. It's such a clever little song, such a cold little song mm-hmm. in a way. And the punchline, which I'm not going to share with y'all because you got to listen to it.
Yeah.
It's like Bette Davis in the back of that car in All About Eve giving the classic monologue about how everybody's going to move on from you if you're a woman and you reach a certain age. It's brilliant. That's my favorite song right now on the record. But Hazel, I think we're going to be pulling out songs from this record for a long time, and each one we're going to live with over the course of the next year. And Grammys are going to get interesting, right? I really thought Beyonce had a lock, and I'm still rooting for you, Beyonce. Shh, don't tell Taylor. But man, this is a contender.
Absolutely. Is Taylor not always a contender? But yes, absolutely.
I know. Now we're just waiting for you, Billy. That's Taylor Swift, The Tortured Poets Department, available everywhere.
You look like Stevie Nicks in 75. The hair and lips crowd goes wild. At her fingertips, half moonshine, a full eclipse.
So another incredible album out today is by the rapper Baby Mama, and the album is called Sleep Paralysis.
Yeah, I do whatever I want. I'm in a place I'm feeling it clean. Thinking the baby with the dick in the front. Smoke me a rough, I smoke me a blank. Yeah, I do whatever I want. Fuck on my nigga, we book for the man. Step out in Gucci, he take me to lunch. Wait, it's too early, he take me to brunch. Yeah, I do whatever I want. Yeah, looking better, I'm still nonchalant. Okay, I'm popping, you hating for what? Get you some money and get them some goods. Yeah, I do whatever I want. I cannot die cause I still got a stint. Really that nigga, I ain't got a friend. I like your nigga, he ate me for lunch. Yo.
Baby Mama is Brittany Moore, an artist from Chattanooga, Tennessee, who makes very funny, raunchy rap music about everything in her life, you know, being a single mom, bad relationships, paying her bills, etc. And she has this very kind of signature, measured, like icy cool delivery. She released her critically acclaimed debut album, Motherland. This is her sophomore album, and it really expands Baby Mother's sound. It's very UK garage inspired, and like is inspired by a lot of the dance music genres that she heard when she did a post-lockdown tour in the UK. So if you like Baby Mother's rap and you're familiar with her work, this is like Baby Mother in overdrive, like for the dance floor, highly danceable, super fun, breakbeat driven. And yeah, it was just really exciting to hear her in this mode on this album. What did you think, Anne?
Well, I love the collaborators she chose. You know, she really leaned into the more sort of avant-garde side of UK dance music, working with people like Foyzy, Kilder, Redley, and Omari. I know these producers have worked with people like the rapper Mike and Jamie XX and just cool people. So Hazel, I'm not surprised that you were into it, because that's your jam, you know? And I think it really works. You know, Baby Mother has said that her rapping style is all about picking a cool beat or sound in any of her productions and playing with that and like playing her words off that one sound. And there's so much going on in these songs, you know, for her to connect with as a rapper. Think about the song Lines. I think that's really an amazing one. It's based around a very apt metaphor, a little dirty. She's talking about a drug-filled sexual encounter. And the line is, he want to cut me like lines on the dresser, which I just love.
Two for you, two for me, two for her. Ain't no pressure on it. Now he want to cut me like the lines on the dresser. When he put me in my eyes and squeeze my thighs, he see the devil riding. How he want to cut me like the lines on the dresser. Yeah, lines on the dresser.
And, you know, the team that produced it, Bond Music Vision, they build this really, it's a very cokey, you know, very jittery production. I think it's really cool.
Yeah, she just has like a really incredible sense of humor, like the way that she can just take an image that you would never think you would hear in a song and just turn it into an incredible hook. I mean, I love that song, Tony Hawk.
Mm. Yo, I'm skating off on you bitches. I take it off for my nigga. My fingers stay on the trigger. They jealous, my dick is bigger. Hotter, I'm like a figure. Hit it, I ain't no footer. I'm squatting, I'm on the shooter. I'm clicking the bigger picture. Watch me pop it, break it out. Bitches mad, I'm taking out. Try to put me in a bad position. I'm still a boss. Still the hardest with the sound. Still the big city lookout. Still a skater, see you later. Tony Hawking on my head.
You know, at one point she says, like, still a skater, see you later. Like, there's something so funny and dumb about that in a beautiful way. But I also think there's another part of this album that I love, that Baby Mother's, like, kind of spooky. Mm. Like, she's kind of a goth girl. And the title Sleep Paralysis was, like, inspired by her own experiences with having sleep paralysis.
Yeah, sleep paralysis, that thing that happens when you wake up in the middle of the night, but you cannot move any muscle in your body, and you're just, you're like, trapped with it. It's so metal, the idea of sleep paralysis, you know? It's like, it is a nightmare.
It's actually, I don't have sleep paralysis, but my understanding is that
either,
it's terrifying.
I can't even imagine. It's like, yuck.
But, you know, there are so many songs on this album, like Mother's Massacre, or like Final Girl, Ghostface, where she's like working with this really like horror movie imagery, like satanic imagery. She has that incredible lyric on Ghostface where she says, I'm spooky, brought my boo with me. Like, another, like, really funny one-liner.
Bitch, I'm the one, it ain't no two with me. Call me Mother Massacre, I'm spooky, brought my boo with me. I can tell your hoe really a hater, but it's cool with me. I'm the fact, she don't, she disagree, she slow, she text me tea. Yeah, bitches want my life, come and get it, bring a knife. Yeah, bitches want my life, come and get it, bring a knife. Yeah.
I know, she's so good at those. And I mean, we should talk about the cover, because it's yet another cover that represents a bedroom. And in fact, I think the back cover of the record shows a childhood picture of her in her bedroom. And then the front cover is this absolute horror movie redo of that with you know, she has the Sailor Moon crescent tattooed on her forehead. If anybody needs to know what that is, just, I don't know, search anime Sailor Moon, you'll figure it out. But all of the dolls in that picture have that same tattoo on their forehead, and it's just like, ooh, you know, she's got this big grin on her face, and that's what her music sounds like, you know. It's fun and playful and bright and shiny, but also gritty and intense.
It's intense and it has this rawness to it and this realness to it that feels like you're getting this incredible work of art, but you're also being really let into these intimate moments and spaces in her life that she's balancing with, like, being a bad bitch, but also being funny. And, you know, I have to shout out Christina Lee wrote an incredible essay for NPR Music's Turning the Tables series a few years ago about Baby Mother's debut album Motherland. And, you know, something that Christina communicated so beautifully was just like the multitudes to Baby Mother's music, that there's not one part of her life that, you know, defines her in a singular way. And I just think you can really hear that on this album too, just the way that she's expanding her sound, the images that she's working with, her sense of humor. And yeah, it's a really great album.
And I love that she's working with these new producers, but she still has her, you know, her steadfast companion, Rock Floyd, has one track on here, and it is the track Final Girl. He also mixed and engineered the whole album, but those two just have a flow together. Her vocals ping off his production so effortlessly, and I'm glad that that track is here to show that that collaboration lives on.
Shout out the Riley. Yeah. Okay, I'm done without a charity. Need these bitches scared of me. I'm done without a charity. Need these bitches scared of me. Need these niggas scared of me. Need these bitches scared of me. I'm done without a charity.
That was Baby Mother's Sleep Paralysis.
So now we're going to take a short break, and we'll have more albums for you, including the new one from my boys, Pearl Jam, when we get back.
If you ever said you love me, never mean it. Never needed all my feelings, so conceited.
And we're back. I'm Ann Powers. I'm here with my girl, Hazel Sills, from NPR Music. Woo-hoo. We're talking about some of the best new albums out on this Friday, April 19th. And I am very excited about our next subject here. Hazel, this is not exactly your wheelhouse, but I think you told me you sat down and watched the movie Singles again. So you're ready to talk about the new Pearl Jam record, Dark Matter.
I'm ready to talk about the new Pearl Jam. I'm ready to talk about where grunge has gone. Will it ever come back? What does Pearl Jam mean today? Love it all.
In the light from my eyes, in the blood from my heart.
It is so back. That's all I have to say. It is so back with this record.
Is
I'm very excited about this record. It sounds so great. This is Pearl Jam's 12th album. It's the first one produced by Andrew Watt, who is a 33-year-old dude, hilariously, if somewhat insultingly, dubbed the Granddad Whisperer by the writer Eli Ennis. Watt is known for producing lots of people, including Ozzy Osbourne, Elton John, the Rolling Stones, but also Miley Cyrus, Justin Bieber. But he's very good at sort of bringing artists back to what makes them great and then shining it up a little so it hits a little harder, feels a little more pop. And Watt produced Eddie Vedder's wonderful 2022 solo album, Earthling. And this album came out of those sessions. Vedder was totally on a writing jag and called up his buddies, his lifelong brothers, and said, come on down, let's capitalize on this energy. And they went into the studio. Unfortunately, that studio, which was Watt's studio, was destroyed by the horrible LA rains. And so some time span later, they reunited in Rick Rubin's studio, Shangri-La. And then they recorded this album really quickly in 10 days. And one thing about it is I think that energy is so strong on this. There is just an absolute drive. Eddie's actually said this is their best album ever, which is kind of an intense thing to say 12 albums in.
Yeah, I mean, I completely agree with hearing that energy, like, in this album. Like, I put this album on and I was surprised by how raw and rough around the edges in a good way to me this music sounded, like the way that it sounded like old Pearl Jam or like OG Pearl Jam.
And absolutely.
I had read an interview with Watt where he talked about like really wanting to almost make a live Pearl Jam album like in the studio. And that is really actually what I heard on this album. And I feel like there are so many songs, especially, you know, the title track, which is like, you know, soaring up the charts, like is a huge hit for them, that feels like super propulsive and intense. And like there's that song, Running. It almost sounds like a punk song.
No, completely. It's hardcore. It's Eddie's hardcore roots, you know.
But I'm curious, like, I mean, you're Pearl Jam girl through and through.
Yeah.
Obviously, you know, Eddie said that this was their best album ever. But in the catalog, in their catalog, like, where do you place this album?
Well, I, you know, I'm always excited when they come back. And I feel like they have come back on a cycle over and over again. Like an album like Backspacer, totally back. That was 2009. That, you know, they have a tendency sometimes on their albums to wander, let's just say, to get a little overwhelmed by all their ambitions and let things jam out, which is what we love, what we devotees love about them in some ways, but it's just nice to hear them tight and, mm-hmm. you know, all of them just in their prime on this. And Hazel, maybe I need to explain the Pearl Jam circle to you because...
Please.
Let me be the Pearl Jam whisperer for you. Well, there's a picture of them that I think might have run with that spin piece, the interview with Andrew Watt, where they're all in a circle. And that's how they actually record. They record like that in a circle facing each other. Every member brings something distinctive. You know, Ed is obviously the charismatic rock star, the lyrical songwriter. Stone Gossard, he's the weirdo. He loves Frank Zappa. He's taking them, you know, into strange corners with his riffing. Jeff is the bassist, and he kind of organizes where Stone's going. Mike McCready's jumping up with his killer guitar solos. And then, okay, we have to just spend a little time talking about Matt Cameron, separate from everybody else. That's the drummer. Just tell me what you think about the drums on this record first.
I actually wrote in my notes for the song React Respond, I wrote, the drumming on that track is bananas.
I recently was at a festival and I was hanging out talking to the great jazz bassist Wayne Horvitz, who has a studio in Seattle, and he's worked with Matt on a few different projects, and he was extolling Matt's greatness and his versatility. I mean, Matt is such a heavy drummer, but he's also so inventive, you know, and he was, of course, the drummer for Soundgarden. One thing that Andrew Watt said he wanted with this record was to get a little Soundgarden energy into the Pearl Jam mix. And I think that we really hear that. You know, we hear that metal edge, and I love it when they go there. It's really cool.
I feel like the past, I don't know, decade, two decades, like the question of where mainstream rock, like where rock music exists in the mainstream, you know, with all the other genres or like bands who are coming up and are sort of genreless, like, it's just great to hear a rock band that has been around for so long just really be, as you said, like in their element and just making like very straightforwardly great rock music.
Totally. And I think when you ask the question, where is grunge or where is the 90s rock sound? It's right here. It never went away for these guys. It's about sustaining your connection with each other and just making great songs. And you know, maybe we can go out listening to a little bit of Something Special, which is such a sweet and fun song that Ed wrote for his daughters. I love the songs he writes for his family. I love his ballads. And this is a corny ass song. It really, really is.
I mean,
there's a lyric, "You're not the type to need a man, but if you find one, he better know you're damn special." And
I wrote that lyric too.
I mean, dad rock. It is the most beautiful example of dad rock. And I'm here to say dad rock has been redeemed by this record.
And it's okay, should this life knock you down? The twisted wheel, you know it keeps on spinning round. Bet on yourself, your number's oh so special. And when it gets fucked up, you need a helping hand. Do it yourself, you're not the type to need a man. But if you find one, you better know you're damn special.
Eddie. Great dad. And
they're all, you know, it's great. Love them. Yeah. PTA dads, fantastic. That's Pearl Jam with Dark Matter for all of your straight-ahead rock needs. Now, Hazel, we have a record to talk about that is nothing like straight-ahead rock. You and I both love this record. I know you brought it to me, actually, and I thank you for that.
The next album is Sentiment by the artist Claire Rousset. Claire Rousset is an experimental composer and artist whose music at this point in her career is very centered on and really plays with like found sound.
Mm-hmm.
Voice memos, field recordings, iPhone notification sounds, like text-to-speech monologues. Like she is a musician, but she's also like an artist and a sound designer at this point. And she's someone who is like recording every aspect of her life and turning it into art. She's very prolific. She has so many albums and like random releases on Bandcamp. But this album is pretty significant, I think, for her enormous discography. It's her first album for the label Thrill Jockey, and it really pushes her deeply irreverent, found sound aesthetic into a place that feels very accessible and palatable to like, I think, most music listeners, or sort of like she's pushing her sound to a much more accessible place. And she gave an interview to the writer Sean Rinaldo, who runs this incredible newsletter called First Floor, where she talked about how this is like the closest thing she's made to a songwriter record.
Yeah, and it's interesting because Thrill Jockey is a label that's had a lot of success and really become legendary by bringing experimental music into the indie mainstream, if not the pop mainstream, with bands like Tortoise, for example, or The Sea and Cake, or Talia Zedek. So many great artists on that label. But I'm curious what you think of the fact that Claire Rousset has also associated this album with emo, specifically. Are you hearing that?
Yes, definitely. I mean, she's joked a lot in the past about being, quote, emo ambient, quote, but this is the album where she, like, really lives up to that descriptor.
Totally.
This is such a guitar-driven album.
Yeah, like, she has one of my favorite guitarists, Hand Habits, on this, playing on the song IOY2.
Don't have to be true, just say.
It's definitely taking inspiration from like Midwestern emo bands like American Football.
Christian emo bands like Pedro the Lion.
Yes.
That David Bazan record, Curse Your Branches, kept coming to my mind when I was listening to this record.
Yes. And like Claire grew up in Texas, she grew up in a strictly evangelical Christian household where like secular music was like banned. And, you know, I think she has an interesting or maybe unique relationship to like Christian emo because there's so much of that, as you just described.
Yeah.
And, but yeah, I there's so many songs on this album that just the way that she is merging her more electronic experimental impulses with, you know, that kind of like noodling almost slow core guitar, it's just really beautiful. I mean, I think that song Head from this album is just so devastating.
Oh, I know.
And beautiful.
She writes about sex so well. I think she writes about the awkwardness and disconnection that can happen during sex really well.
Yes.
Spending half of my whole life giving you head just in case you need to forgive me one day for something that I did. Down flows in.
Yeah, and another album cover, as we talked about with Baby Mother, where someone is in their bedroom.
Right.
But this is, I feel like she wouldn't disagree. This is like a depression bed.
Oh my God, totally, completely. Crushed beer cans and like cigarettes scattered around. I read that she's actually recreating that bedroom on tour, every tour. She's going to be in that bedroom and maybe in the bed. I don't know.
That's so Tracy Emin of her.
I know.
I did
oh
not
God,
know that
completely.
She was doing that.
Oh my God, totally. It's the tent. It's the Tracy Emin tent all over again. But you know, you're talking about depression. There are all those books out there, those kind of self-help books with titles like How to Love Someone with Depression. And I'm not making fun of those books. They're very important. But I feel like this album is a kind of sonic account of doing just that. I think it's interesting how her perspective shifts. Sometimes she seems like she's a depressed person. Sometimes she seems like she's with a depressed person and, you know, intimate with a depressed person and can't really navigate that. And her voice also, the way that she manipulates her voice really is fascinating in terms of shifting perspectives. Because it's not exactly, I mean, I guess she's using auto-tune. She's using specific tools to create her voice, and it's wild. It is like a character of its own.
Yeah, I mean, the character thing is interesting because it's like, I don't know exactly how old Claire is, but she's someone who is very much of like a Zoomer millennial cusp generation who's like always documenting her life, like literally recording every sound in her life and her feelings, and then sort of pushing them out into the world. Or like sharing them in a new context. But there's always this kind of like striving in her work, like to, you know, communicate something simple in this very like distanced, weird way, whether it's like writing something down and making it text to speech or layering her vocals in auto-tune so you never really hear her voice in its most natural state. And it all sort of just adds to this really, you know, intense beauty of this album and just her body of work in general. But yeah, I think that the ways in which she is writing sort of traditional song structures on this album, working with the guitar, pulling in those emo influences, it makes me really excited for kind of the next phase of her career and what she is pushing her music towards.
That is Claire Rousset. Sentiment is the name of the album.
Everyone's in their bed.
Everybody's in their bed, except Pearl Jam. Pearl Jam is rocking out Band of Brothers
out and about
in the studio.
They don't sleep.
They don't even have beds.
They would never sell out and get a
they
bed.
Would
Are you kidding me? Get a bed? Pearl Jam?
Get a bed, no way. Now we're going to take another quick break, but then we're going to come back and share a bunch more music with you in our lightning round that's coming up soon. Okay, it's time for a quick roundup of some other albums out today, April 19th, and the first one I'm bringing to the table is Hypocrite by the singer-songwriter Stephanie Lambring.
16, purity ring, don't let anybody touch you from your neck to your knees.
short dress, temptress. God forbid he slips his fingers up to God's best.
I fell for this artist a few years back when I first heard her single Joy of Jesus. It became one of my favorite songs of 2020. Absolutely loved her debut album, Autonomy, and now she's got this new release. She's working with some Nashville greats like Wilco's Pat Sansone and the producer Teddy Morgan. She's polished up her sound a little bit, and the sound perfectly frames these absolutely brutally honest songs. You know, I hate the word brave. Absolutely hate it. But the way that Lambring tackles these big themes like motherhood or grief or the beauty myth, it applies. Like, these are truly courageous songs. And she is so good at making you cry. Trust me.
The 2021 Polaris Music Prize winning rapper and producer Cadence Weapon has a new album out today. It's titled Roller Coaster, and it features a bunch of great collaborations with producers I love, including Lorraine James, Machine Drum, Jack Green, and more.
App Store, Trojan Horse, Trapdoor, Flash Drive, Timeline, Patch Bay, Everyday, Online, Machine Learning, Dream Merchant, All Night, Screen Surfing, Sine Wave, Space Age, Rabbit Hole, Researching, Future Perfect.
The Colombian-Canadian singer and producer Taishi is back with her third album. It's called Valerie, which is actually her given name. She started this album during the pandemic. It traces her journey out of those perilous times. I love her blend of Latin styles like bachata and tropicalismo with R&B and indie pop. It's sexy and winning, and her bilingual fluidity is so on point. She's, as a vocalist and a producer, she's just great. Taishi, Valerie.
One of the strongest punk albums that I've heard in a very, very long time came out this past Wednesday from the Washington, D.C. band Echo Astral.
The baby myself, the crypto castle, popping lilies on a flat screen TV. Pseudoscientific, monolithic, best practice yo you've ever seen.
It is the band's debut album, and it's titled Pink Balloons, and it is an extremely good collection of confrontational, feminist, but also very funny songs, anchored by the vocalist and songwriter J.L. Holzman. Highly, highly recommend this album.
And finally, I want to recommend the new double album from the legendary guitarist Bill Frisell. It's called Orchestras. We're used to hearing Bill Frisell play in a trio format, but on this record, it documents two sessions he did with full-on orchestras, arranged by the great arranger Michael Gibbs, with bassist Thomas Morgan, drummer Rudy Royston. Beautiful music, so gorgeously put together. I'm particularly excited because Michael Gibbs is the guy who did one of my favorite Joni tracks ever, Paprika Plain. So this is legend meeting legend. Fantastic. It's called Orchestras, Bill Frisell. All right, and that's our show, a big show, a Taylor Swift show. We welcome your feedback. Write us at allsongs@npr.org. If you like the show, tell your friends. Please leave a review wherever you listen to podcasts. Subscribe to our newsletter at npr.org/musicnewsletter. And please remember that if you want to listen to this show sponsor-free, you can support our work by joining NPR Music Plus. Just go to plus.npr.org/NPR Music or search for NPR Music in Apple Music Podcasts. This podcast was produced by Joaquin Kotler. We had editorial support from Jacob Gans and Saraya Mohammed. I'm Ann Powers.
I'm Hazel Sills.
Hazel, when's our next Taylor Swift discussion session?
Hopefully tomorrow. Hopefully we just talk about it all weekend. We don't stop talking about it.
All right, you're on my books. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll be back next week.